at some point to mute your microphone, and then you can turn it on when you want to ask me something or whatever, you know. Depending upon whether there's, you know, noise in the background, you'll judge it on your own. Okay, then, Rabosai. I want to study with you the concept of shiurim. We know that mitzvos require shiurim. For example, you'll find shiurim for the dalet minim, for the shofar. You'll find shiurim for the matzah. You have to eat a kezayis. You'll find shiurim for kiddush. It requires drinking a revius. And on the flip side, there's shiurim for losa says, in order to violate Shabbos, every malacha has its shiur. In the case of, for example, Sidur Depas, it's Kurgo Geres. In the case of Yom HaKippurim, the violation of Inui requires a certain shiur of Kikosevas Hagasa. In the case of Machalas Asuros, the shiur would be a Kizayis. And the question that we want to raise tonight, which is really fundamental when we understand shiurim, is what's the nature and the purpose of a shiur? And fundamentally, the question we want to raise is whether a shiur is absolute, it's objective, it's a legal definition, and you have to work with it, whether you understand it or you don't understand it. Or the other approach is to say no. A shiur is not some sort of legal definition that's always applicable. The shiur is what I call a means to an end. And I'll try to explain what I mean. Take, for example, the case of malachos on Shabbos. We have 39 malachos, and each malacha has a purpose or a goal, what we call a tikkun. It creates something in the world, it fixes up something in the world. The shiur is meant to reflect some sort of meaningful tikkun. So, for example, if you weave a garment, at least two tefiros is considered a meaningful act of weaving. From this perspective, the shiur is not some sort of legal absolute standard. It's not totally objective. It's there as a means to achieve a goal, to create a state of being. I'll give you a mashal. A thirsty person needs a certain volume in order to hydrate his body. But obviously there are a host of variables that are going to come into play as to how much, how large of a volume of water or liquids he'll need to hydrate his body. You know, the standards here will be relative, they'll change. It's all reflective of the subject. So for example, in Shabbos, we have not only avos, we have toldos. The av malacha in this case is zorea. I take a seed and I plant it in the ground. The tolda is mashkiz rayim, where I already have a zera in the ground, it's been planted, and I pour water on it to engender its growth. Clearly, the very existence of a tolda, which is derived from the av, is a clear demonstration that the av itself is not just an action, what we call tsurat ha-pu'ula, you know, it's got a certain definite tsura to it, but rather the action is there, as we said before, to achieve a goal. So for example, the case of planting a zera, forget about the maisa, the tsura, the maisa of zuria per se, or netiyah in the case of Ilanos, talk about the goal of being the Gadol Peros or the Gadol Yerokos, whatever it might be. In other words, I've defined my ultimate goal and my tikkun. The means to arrive at that goal is one particular mice, in this case the Av called Zorea that was done in the Mishkan. But there may be a host of different other maisim or malachos in the Tzuras HaMalacha that can achieve the same goal. So although the distance between Zorea and Mashkiz Roim is Mimizrach Lamarov, because we're talking about a whole different Tzuras HaMaisa. We're not putting something in the ground that's going to bear fruit. We're putting water in the ground. But nevertheless, the goal is the same. So therefore, we see that the Maisa is only a means to achieve an end. And what we want to do today is to study an entire slew of cases and sugyas and shas. Hopefully we'll get to cover about five sugyas, And in each one, to try to analyze what's the nature of the shiur. Again, is it formalistic? Is it meaning legal? And it's a tzuras ha-maisa that's well defined, it's objective? Or is it simply a reflection of what the Torah believes is the way to get to a certain goal, to achieve a certain end? I want to point out at the outset that in many sugyas in Shas, you'll see the phrase darko bekach, or ein darko bekach. In my mind, that's like a code word. That's a key phrase. Whenever you hear the phrase darko bekach, what you're talking about is a legal, formalistic shiur. If you don't do it the way it's done, although you may achieve the same goal in a different way, the Torah rejects that. Again, that could be good for you in the case of an isurim, because if you violate an isur in a way that's ein darko bekach. So for example, if I were to talk about a chola on Yom HaKippurim and feed him intravenously, and I would tell you that's ein derech achila bekach, even though the intravenous feeding would certainly achieve the goal, you know, we need to bring this person back to health, and we strengthen the person, what we call yishuv hadas, but nevertheless, we're lacking the formalistic, rigorous, legal maisa, the act that's defined in objective terms. Why? Because the Torah says that you need darko bekach. You need to do it exactly the way it's normally done. That gives a very formal definition to a shiur. The other way of saying it is that, oh no, let's look at the goal, and it doesn't matter in what manner and what method you achieve that goal. You could take something which is aimed darko bekach, but nevertheless you would be in violation of the isur, or you could have a kiyum mitzvah, even though despite its aimed darko bekach, because on your level, given the variables of your situation subjectively, you achieve the same goal. So take, for example, in the case of Seuda Shabbos. You know, we have to eat Gimel Seudos on Shabbos, and that's the kiyum of Mitzvahs Oneg Shabbos. So it's quite possible that there, the Achila is not an Achila per se. You know, it's not defined, it doesn't reflect the universal objective definition of a Mais Achila. It's whatever brings you into a state of Oneg. So therefore, I might suggest that even if a person, you know, had eaten for his second Suda half a Zayas, and now he wants to eat another half a Zayas for his third Suda, since he's still digesting the first half a Zayas, could it be that a half a Zayas, which might not be enough for a mitzvah's birkas hamazon in the sense of yachalta, you need a mais achilu, but for the sense of achieving oneg, it might be sufficient. In fact, the Gaonim suggests the possibility that you can fast on Shabbos, what's called a tainis chalom, because that'll bring you to a state of oneg. Clearly, from the perspective of the Gaonim, the definition of achila b'Shabbos is not your formal, universal, objective definition of achila. Here's a guy who's fasting, he's not eating a thing, but yet through his fasting, he achieves the mitzvah of oneg. Therefore, the achila is clearly only a means to an end. You can achieve that end in the opposite direction, given your subjective situation. And therefore, it's possible that fasting, paradoxically, is a cue of the mix of Suda Shabbos. Right, that's all by way of definition of introduction. Correct? Okay. Let's see if we can move on, and I'm happy that Daniel tells me, Daniel Hoffman, that is, that he can hear me and see me. Okay, great. Excellent. Kol hakavod to Webex. Right, we move on. So if you take a look at the page that you have in front of you, you'll see a sugya quoted on the bottom right side, that's page Tzadi Dalin, in Yuma Pei Aleph Amid Aleph. And the Gemara discusses the case of Yom Kippur. And in this particular sugya, we want to focus our attention on chometz. Chometz is vinegar. Could a person violate Yom Kippur by drinking vinegar? Vinegar, normally, is not considered something which is derech shesiyah bekach. People don't generally drink chometz. Oh, I'm hearing one of the Beiwitzes. Oh, good. Now, say hello to Perry for me. The Gemara records a statement of Rebbe in a Braisa, in which Rebbe made a statement that chometz has to be avoided. And Rav Gidol Bar Menashe, and this is on the left column, he went out and he declared that the halacha is not like Rebbe. The Talmidim misunderstood him and they thought that he was basically saying you're allowed to drink chometz on Yom HaKippurim, again, because that's not the way we normally drink. And therefore, the Talmidim misunderstood him and they had a party. Again, you and I would imagine serving other drinks at a party, but they served chometz at the party, and it was on Yom HaKippurim. And they drank an awful lot of chometz. There was a serious volume of chometz that was drunk. So Rav Gidol gets very upset, and he said, yes, you have to understand, when I made the statement, Ein Halacha K'Rebbe, what I meant to say was B'di'evet. I never told you, L'chatchila, you're allowed to drink chometz. And what I meant to say was, the halacha is not like Rebbe, who would say that you're chayav for drinking a small volume of chometz, as if you had drunk a small volume of water. No, I meant to say that, you know, you shouldn't be drinking too much chometz. You're allowed to drink that small volume, that had it been water, you'd be chayav. In the case of chometz, you're potter. So the Kesef Mishnah is very upset about the Psak of the Rambam in Perek Beis Mehilchas Shvisas Asar, because there the Rambam in Halacha Hey writes, Sheshosa Mashkin She'enam Ru'uyim L'shtil. And the Rambam says that if you drink various liquids that are not generally drinkable, and on the list he's got chometz, he says, Afilu Shosa Me'em Harbe, Hareza Potter Minakaris. And the Beis Yosef in Hilchas Yom HaKippurim in Shulchan Aruch Simon Tafresh Yud Beis doesn't understand the Rambam, because the Rambam clearly indicates that no matter what volume of chometz you drink, you imbibe, you're still okay, at least on a Doraisa level. And that doesn't make any sense, because the kula of Rav Gidol was limited to a small volume of chometz. But a larger volume of chometz, Rav Gidol would say, even though it's ein darko b'kach, nevertheless, it should be a violation of Yom Kippur. The Beis Yosef then quotes Rabbeinu Yerucham, and Rabbeinu Yerucham says that kol apturim bein b'achil bein b'shtia dafka ma'at amal har bein lo. Clearly, Rabbeinu Yerucham is reflecting the simple, straightforward Gemara in Yuma Pei Aleph of Rav Gidol, who says that I only allowed you to drink a small volume of chometz, not a larger volume of chometz. In other words, the volume of chometz that I would permit you to drink on Yom Kippur is equal to the same corresponding volume that you're allowed to drink, that you would be violating Yom Kippur if it would have been water. But to drink a volume of chometz, that would be a violation of Yom Kippur, no less than drinking water on Yom HaKippurim. So perhaps we could say the following, that whereas the Rambam is looking at the shtia of Yom HaKippurim, which is a violation of the Nisim of Inui, in very objective universal standards, you have to define what's Darko B'kach in shtia and what's Ein Darko B'kach in shtia. Chometz is Ein Darko B'kach. Says the Rambam, I don't care, you can drink all the chometz in the world, but it's not called shtia. Rabbeinu Yerucham, on the other hand, is looking at shtia from the perspective of the goal of shtia. The goal of shtia is what we call yisuve date, to somehow remove those pangs of hunger that you're suffering from on a fast day, in this case on Yom Kippur. And therefore, Rabbeinu Yerucham is going to say, well, how much, what volume of chometz are you actually drinking? If you're drinking a limited amount of chometz, it's not going to accomplish the goal of yisuve date, of lashivet nafsho. But if you drink a larger volume, then enochinami, now you would be violating Yom Kippur, because you are undermining inui by achieving this sense of meshiv nafsho yisuve date. So that's one sugya
that we wanted to look at. Again, I would take a deeper look at this sugya and perhaps suggest that the Rambam holds that no matter how much chometz you drink, it might not achieve the goal of Yisuvei Daite. But clearly, from Rabbeinu Yerucham's perspective, we're introducing a variable that shifts and that changes, that introduces a subjective element of defining the Cheftza Shel Shtia, in this case Chometz is a Cheftza Shel Shtia, as a means to an end, which the end of which is to undermine Idui, and therefore the different volumes here just completely reject the concept of an absolute shear. There is no absolute shear. In fact, I would raise the following objection. If Rabbeinu Yerucham is going with this approach, to what extent does the violation of Achila and Shisi on Yom HaKippur become absolutely subjective? Could one say that for Og Melech HaBashan, drinking a revius would not be sufficient to violate Yom Kippur, because it's not going to be Miyashiv Daita? I mean, the man is, you know, Moshe Rabbeinu doesn't reach his ankles and he jumps 30 amos high. So perhaps, you know, we have to re-examine our definitions according to Rabbeinu Yerucham, because otherwise we're at the verge of what I call total anarchy. How do we define the violation of Achil and Shasi and Yom Kippur once we introduce this, you know, moving scale and this subjective element? Have you achieved Yisuvei Daiti? Have you not? Did you undermine the Inui, the state of Inui? Did you not? I need some sort of standards. Obviously, the Rambam's approach, the way we defined it, has the greater advantage of avoiding all of that. You see, whenever you deal with a formalistic legal definition that's absolute, that's objective, you save yourself a lot of sweat and toil. You know what I mean? You don't have to start asking, well, what if? There's no what if. You know, this is what constitutes achila. This is what constitutes shasiya. Ve'ein al maladun. Let's move on to a different sugya, and that is the Rambam at the beginning. You know, a kohen who drinks is not allowed to do avod. That's called the Isur Shtuya Yayin, which is derived from the parasha that immediately follows the death of Nadav Avihu, you'll remember. And there, in the beginning, the very opening halach in Hilchas Bias Migdash, the Rambam tells us that although a kohen might be kosher lavoda, but if he drank yayin, he's not allowed to go onto the mizbeach, and he's not allowed to be a kohen or oved. If he does so and violates misa shesuya yayin, then he's chayav misa bidei shamayim. And the Rambam goes on to say, "Vahu, when does this halach apply? Sheshasa revius yayin chay bevas achas. Avalim shasa pachos mi revius yayin. Or if he drinks it in small amounts over an interval, stretched out on an interval of time, then he's potter, he doesn't violate the lav, and his avoda is an avoda kshir." And the Kesef Mishnah is fascinated by the following fact. He says that it would seem, according to the Rambam, that with regard to the Isur of Shasir Yayin, whether or not he violates the Isur in Pachos Mikashir, if he drinks less than Erfiyus Yayin, the Rambam uses the term Potter. And as a general rule throughout the Rambam in Mishnah Torah, when the Rambam indicates that you're potter for something, he's implying that there is a violation, just that we cannot punish you for it. Says the Kesef Mishnah, let's read his language, this is on page Tzadi Hei on the right bottom. Zeu shekosav Rabbeinu avalim shasa pachos b'revius yayin potter, klomar, Isura mia ika. He has violated an Isur of Shesuya Yayin. However, in truth, if we open up the Aruch Chaim Siman Kuf Chav Ches, which reflects in our modern context, even though we don't have Avodah B'Migdash, but we do have something where Shesuya Yayin is Halacha L'Maisa, and that's Birchas Kohen. So both the Taz and the Prima Gadim postulate that if a Kohen drinks Pachos Mikashir, less than a Revius Yayin, he does not violate the Iser of Shesuya Yayin at all. So it's interesting that according to the Taz and the Prima Gadim, what we have over here is an absolute shear. There's no room for flexibility or for alteration. In all cases, the violation of Shesir Yayin applies in the case of a Revius. Nothing less a Revius will do. It's Chad V'Cholak. Everything is smooth. Whereas according to the Rambam, we're going to have to ask the question, well, how much Yayin does a Kohen have to drink before he's doing the Avodah on the Mizbech to violate this Iser? We know that he's not Chayav, he doesn't possible his Avodah B'Dievid until he drinks a Revius, but yet the Rambam postulates a violation of the Iser the way the Knesset Mishnah understands it, even in less than a Kezayis. But what we have to say about the Rambam, and you'll see this on the bottom left column, is that the Rambam, insofar as the shear is not absolute, is viewing Yayin, Shetiyas Yayin, as a means to an end. The Torah finds it objectionable to drink Yayin because that's what the Torah says. It's an Iser. So let's read his words. He says, HaTorah sel Shesia You see, this definition is reflective of the Shitas, Hataz, and the Prima Gadim. And it's really fascinating because the Taz and the Prima Gadim are working with the assumption that it's impossible to reach any state of Shikrus, I guess in any significant way, without a Shesia of this minimal amount. Correct? Of a Revius Yayin. So perhaps we could say the following, that according to Kesef Mishnah, there should be an Iser in the Rambam's favorite reference of Chatzi Shir, and Chatzi Shir applies whenever the Torah has a real Shir. What I mean by a real Shir is a formal Shir. If it's absolute, then the Torah is saying that although there's a Maisa Shesia, which the Torah prohibits, even less than a certain shear, but you're not chayav until you violate the shear. So that it comes out that the way we're presenting this is that according to the Rambam Shita, even though there's no possibility of coming to shikrus in a case of less than a shear of Revius Yayin, nevertheless it's prohibited, insofar as the halacha universally is chatzi shear asur min haTorah. However, we can suspend the operation of Chatzi Shir Asur min haTorah if the Shir is not absolute and formal, but rather Shir is a means to an end. If the Torah is prohibiting the Kohen from drinking a Revius Yayin because that's going to bring him to a state of Shikrus, then what the Torah is saying is that less than a Revius Yayin, although it might constitute a Maisa Shtiyas Yayin for all Isurim and for all mitzvahs, but nevertheless, it doesn't engender a violation of the Isa Shisa Yayin because it doesn't have the element of shikrus. Whereas the Rambam sees the shtia of Yayin as a formal shir, it's absolute, and therefore we apply the principle of chatzi shir asur min haTorah. Whenever the shir is meant to establish the minimum to achieve a certain goal, less than that shir is completely meaningless. It has no validity, no significance, al pi Allah. And therefore the Taz and the Prima Gadim l'shitasam are very right. They're very correct to assume that Shesuya Yayin requires a Revius because otherwise there's no possibility of coming to Shikrus. And therefore, if the whole Shir in the Maisa Shesuya is only to bring you to Shikrus, that's the nature and the essence of the violation, less than that Shir is absolutely meaningless. It doesn't register. And Rabosei, according to this presentation, it would come out an unbelievable conclusion, and that is that Chatzi Shir Asim in HaTorah would not apply if the Shir is the minimum to achieve a goal, because less than that minimum will not achieve that goal. It's not even a Maisa Aver at all. And here I'd like you to fast forward, if you can, just because of the logical connection here, to Tzadi Ches, which is the Avera of Moleches Havara Dalad Amos B'Shus Rahman Shabbos. And the question is, do we apply the universal principle of Chatzi Shir Asim in HaTorah to Havaras Dalad Amos B'Shus Rahman? Meaning, what would be the deal if somebody carried less than four Amos? And indeed, Agol Sashri on the Rosh, in the seventh parak of Shabbos, postulates that we should apply the principle of Chatzi Shir to the case of Dalad Amos. So if you were to carry something three Amos instead of four, you have violated the Iser of Chatzi Shir. However, the Meiri in Shabbos Tafayin Dalad, in the Sugi Meleches Shabbos, says that there's no Iser, according to the Torah law, of being Mavir, something in Rosh Hashanah, if you carry it less than Dalad Amos. It would sound like the Meiri is defining the Shir of Dalad Amos as a means to an end. The minimum means to an end is Dalad Amos. Less than Dalad Amos won't achieve a certain goal, and therefore there's no Chatzi Shir. Because as we said before, in the case of Shesuya Yayin, where the Shir of Revius going to the Taz is a means to an end, meaning that you'll accomplish Shikrus, less than a Shir of Revius Yayin doesn't even begin to register, and therefore the principle of Chatzi Shir is completely suspended. Chatzi Shir Asim in HaTorah will only apply when you have a formal legal Shir. In the case of Dalad Amos, according to the Meiri, the Chiddush is that Dalad Amos is not a formal Shir, and we can say, well, you carried something two Amos, and that's also a violation of HaTorah, because Chatzi Shir Asim in HaTorah. No! Dalad Amos is a means to an end. The question is, what is that end? So the answer seems to be, and here the Meiri is back on Daf Heyom and Beis in Masechta Erevin. He says, "Me'ata kol bi'orech ad dalad amos v'lo ad b'chal mutal lahavir o lizro kaschola lekatzer tzorech." And the Meiri is embellished by the Ritva. The Ritva says that pochos midalad amos eino osim in HaTorah. Why? So both the Meiri and the Ritva, as you'll see on the bottom left, maintain that dalad amos is considered a rishus. We find this in many sugyas and shas, that a radius of dalad amos is considered a domain. And therefore, for example, in Hefker, if something falls within my dalad amos, it's considered to be in my rishus, no one can take it. Well, that's the Rabbanan halacha, but here we're dealing with the Doraisa halacha. So once I carry something, four Amos in Rishus Aravim, it's as if I took it from one Rishus to the other. Now Avaras Dalad Amos becomes very similar to Hotzah and Achnasa, where you take from Rishus Aravim to Rishus Yochid, or the other way around. So my private Rishus is the radius of my Dalad Amos. When I carry something in Rishus Aravim more than Dalad Amos, I've taken it out of my Tchum, my Rishus, and I've set it down in a different Rishus, and thereby violating Otsah. Less than Dalad Amos, it's all within my Rishus. I've never taken it out of my Rishus. So for example, Melechus Otsah, Melechus Havara, Melechus Otsah, Melechus Achnasa, which is taking something from one Rishus to another Rishus, Yishus Aram, Yishus Ayachid, if I would take it from one part of the Rishus Ayachid and bring it closer to the boundary of Rishus Aram, that's not Chatzi Shir Asim in HaTorah, because the violation is only incurred when I put it into a different Rishus. And if that be the case, Rav Osai, let's take a look back on Tzadi Zayin to the Sugya of Achila B'Yom HaKippurim, which is very similar to the discussion that we had at the outset about drinking a large volume of chometz. Even though technically chometz is not derech shesiyah, but if I achieve the goal of undermining my state of inui by drinking a serious volume of chometz, then at least according to some shitas, Rabbeinu Yerucham quoted by Beis Yosef, I violate the Isur of Inui B'Yom HaKippurim. I mean, in the light of that, we could begin to analyze the sugya in Yuma Ayin Gimel and Beis, which is on the left side of your page, Tzadik Zayin. The Gemara says, the Mishnah says, Yom HaKippurim Asur B'Achilu V'Shasiyah, and the Gemara asks, what's the deal with Chatzi Shir? And the Gemara says that there's a machlokus between Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish. According to Rabbi Yochanan, Chatzi Shir Asur Min HaTorah. According to Reish Lakish, Chatzi Shir Mutar Min HaTorah. And the Gemara says that Reish Lakish is Moda, the Chatzi Shir is Asur Min HaRabbanan. So in any event, what we see clearly from the Bavli, because we're going to see the Yerushalmi in just a second, is that the law of Chatzi Shir applies to Achila and Shasiya on Shabbos, which means it will be dependent on the Machlokas, the universal Machlokas between Reish Lakish and Rabbi Yochanan. What that means is that according to Rabbi Yochanan, if you drink a Chatzi Shir or you eat a Chatzi Shir on Yom Kippur, you have violated the Doraisa of Chatzi Shir. However, let's take a look at the Yerushalmi. The Yerushalmi is in Trumos. And there it says, Moda Reish Lakish be Isurei Hanoah, Umoda Reish Lakish be Yom HaKippurim, Umoda Reish Lakish be Asid Lahashna. Very ambiguous Yerushalmi. So the key, perhaps the key to understand any Yerushalmi is in the Vilna Gaon, the Gra. I mean, that was one of his specialties. I remember when we learned Yerushalmi Peah, the Gaon had a totally different Yerushalmi than we had. I mean, even if he had the same text, it was a different Yerushalmi. So the Gaon says, what does it mean in the Yerushalmi? Modere Shlokish B'Yom HaKippur Pirish. Afilu Eino Osir Ba'na Modere Shlokish the Af Pochus Mikashir Osir the Lok Siv Be'Achila Ela Inui Upachas mikashir nami masiv daito kolshu umodereish lakish. My friends, this is a marvelous gaon, but it also, you know, it also confuses us. It shouldn't confuse us, but I mean, lechora confuses us. What we established in the past is that if you have a shir, which is only a means to an end, then the halach of pachos mikshir asa min haTorah does not apply. For example, in the case of shuyayin, according to the Taz and the Prima Gadim, since that's a shir, the nature of which is to achieve a goal, meaning through a revius of yayin you achieve shikrus, which is antithetical to the avodah. In that case, less than a revius yayin, since it doesn't lend itself to shikras at all, is absolutely mutar min haTorah. Here we're saying pokfaker. We're talking about a shir of achil and shasi and yom hakippurim as a means to an end, the goal of which is miyashev daito. And here we're saying that even Reish Lakish, who universally denies the principle of chatzi shir asur min haTorah, would agree that Chatzi Shir Asur Min HaTorah. Moda Reish Lakish B'Yom HaKippurim, says the Gaon, the Af B'Pachos B'Shir Asur, the Loksiv Bei Achil Ela Im. But the answer is obvious, Rabosai. I mean, I'm not coming to Mechadish Chidushim here. The Gaon himself is offering the answer. It could be that in the case of Shisuya Yayin, the Isa Shisu Yayin, Shtiyas Yayin for a Kohen Ha'Oved, less than a shear of revius doesn't even register on the drunkenness Richter scale. It doesn't create any state of shikras whatsoever. But as far as Yishuv Adas is concerned, at least in the Yerushalmi's frame of reference, that shear is a moving scale. It's a sliding scale kind of shear. And it's quite possible that at least there's some element of Yishuv Hadas for a fasting individual with the smallest amount of Achil and Shasiya. So paradoxically, when we apply the principle of a scale shear, because it's the shear is only a means to an end, it's not objective and formal, whether it goes L'chum or L'kula is going to change from case to case. Because it could be that in chatzi shir, less than a shir, you don't even have a havamina that you can reach the goal, and therefore there's no iser whatsoever. That's the case of suyayin according to Taz. On the other hand, it could very well be that the goal could be achieved even with less than the shir, which means to say that according to Reish Lakish, there are two different dinim that apply to Idui and Yom Kippur. One is the chiyuv, and you're only chayuv in the case of achil and shasir, which is achil of kares, by the way, very severe iser, that only applies when you drink a revius or when you eat a kezayin. So, okay, that's not true. But whatever the shir may be, you have to eat or drink the entire shir, kikosevas agasa. However, there's another din. And that din, according to Reish Lakish, is that achil and shasir upsets the inui, and that engenders an avera on the vinisa misnafshol seichem, even though you're not chayv. Meaning you're not chayv kareis for it, but it nevertheless it's an isa dorais. And we now come to the conclusion, which I think is very far-reaching, l'chumra, that even though Reish Lakish will not apply the principle of chatzi shir universally on a Torah level, but nevertheless, in individual cases, he may agree to Rabbi Yochanan that chatzi shir also in a Torah, if the shir is only le'inyan chiyuv, but the accomplishment of that shir through the ma'isa chilash shir or whatever you have can be accomplished in driblets, you know, in stages, in shlavim, even in less than the shir. And on the other end of the spectrum, we could say that even according to Rabbi Yochanan, who postulates universally that chatzi shir asav in HaTorah, there may be cases in which, because the shir is just a means to an end, less than the shir is not asav in HaTorah. So for example, chatzi revius in Kohen, in Shesuyayin, according to the Taz, even though we pass like Rabbi Yochanan, the Chatzi Shir Asam in HaTorah would not be Asam. Here's a case where Rabbi Yochanan agrees that the principle of Chatzi Shir Asam in HaTorah is completely suspended. And then we have the other case of Achil and Shasi on Yom HaKippur, where according to Yushalmi Reish Lakish, who says Chatzi Shir Mutav in HaTorah, that principle is suspended. So again, this concept of a sliding scale, a means to an end, a kind of, shall we call it, a subjective shear where variables kick in, that can lead us either l'chumra or l'kula, depending upon the situation. Very fast. And here I want to talk to you about Kitusei Mechta Shiura, and we're going back now to Tzadivov. And I apologize that I'm rewriting the text, but this is the way I would have presented it. I think it's a more pedagogical way. The Mishnah says in Sukkah, at the beginning of the third perek, that a lulav shel asherah is possible. And basically the Gemara develops this in Lamed Aleph Amid Beis as a reference to what's called asherah de Moshe. That's a high-powered avodah zarah, the status of which is kitusei mechta shiur, means you got to burn it. And anything that requires a shiur, like a lulav, for example, is completely disqualified. And now the Kesef Mishnah, Hilchas Lulav, asks the following question on the Rambam. The Rambam in Hilchas Yibum V'Chalitza, I mean, this is pretty impressive. The Kesef Mishnah in Hilchas Lulav, in the sugya of a Lulav Shal Asherah de Moshe, is asking a kasha on the Rambam in Hilchas Yibum V'Chalitza. The law is that a sandal shel chalitza requires a shear. Actually, if I don't know if you've ever seen chalitza, but when I was doing shimush in the Bezdin, when I was in Grus, so they have three different sizes for the sandal. You know, there are three different like standard sizes. But basically, it has to be enough to cover the foot, but not too large for that foot, because then it's not a sandal, it's not derech halich. In any event, the bottom line is that like shofar and lulav and matzah, there is a minimum shear for sandal shel chalitza. And yet, the Rambam writes in Perek Dal in Hilchos Yibum V'Chalitza that a sandal shel aku is lo tachlotz bo. Okay, that has to do with the laws of Hanami Avodah Zarah. So, l'chatchila, we don't use a sandal of Akum for Chalitz, but in Chalitza, Chalitza Sekshera. Frek the case of Mishnah, why is it different than a Lulav Shalaku, which is Kitusei Mechta Shira, and if you don't have the Shira of the Lulav, and even B'di'evet you're not Yotze Mitzvah L'Kachtav L'chem, why not apply the same standards to a sandal? And the case of Mishnah goes beyond that. He says, what about a shofar? A shofar, if it's Avodah Zarah, is also Omed L'Sreifa, like a Lulav, and therefore it's Kitusei Mechta Shira. Says the Kesef Mishnah, and we want to translate his language into more conceptual, abstract terms, that sandal shel chalitza, the shear, is radically different than the shear of shofar and lulav. He says in the cases of shofar and lulav, the shear is katsuv. I love that word katsuv because I think that that's the halachic term in Lashon Kodesh, what we have been talking about all along. It's absolute. There are no ifs, ands, or buts. It's not relative. There are no variables. It's absolute. A shofar has to be this size. And a lulav has to be this size. It's got to be four tefachim, whatever it is. Masha Enkin, he says, in the case of sandal shel chalitza, less be shir katsuv, ela gadol lufi gadol v'akot lufi katna. And even though we require shei chofer rov raglo, he says, nevertheless, it's not the kind of a shear like in lulav and shofar, and therefore there's no kitusei mechta shear. And my friends, at the surface of it, I don't understand what the Kesef Mishnah is batting about. I mean, it's true that the shear in most cases in a Chefetz Shel Mitzvah, with the lulav, a shofar, esrog, whatever it might be, is katsuv, but and whereas in sandal shalitz it's not katsuv, I agree to that. But nevertheless, you're admitting that there's a shear. Less than that shear. So it's kisarav dami, kedusim after shear, it's akum. But I think again, what you might suggest, and here we're going even a step further than everything we've been saying until now, and that is that you don't apply the principle of kitusei mechta shiura in a shear that's subjective, that's relative, like the case of the sandal. And the reason is because the whole purpose of the shear, in the case of a sandal, the size of the shear is only a means to an end, namely to cover the foot, to set up a halicha binal that's normal for that person. And therefore, even if I grant you that a kitusei mechta shiura, halachically it's kisarav dami, but nevertheless, you can't deny the reality of chofer raglav. And Rabosa, I think what I see here in Lundus is very similar to the question about, again, I don't want to get too far off on a tangent, of shvuah on an eved. Because the halach is einish bo anal karkos. What about Eved? Eved is hukash lekarka. So let's say, for example, I demand that you return two of my avodim, and you say I only have one of your avodim, not the other. Modavik satayin. Is there a shvuah? Not machlokas ram and raivit, I believe. And the answer is, it all depends how you understand the halach of einish bo anal karkos. Are you talking about karkos in a some sort of halachic, abstract, conceptual universe, and then Eved has the same status as the karka, and therefore there's no shvuah in an Eved? Or are you talking about a chefter shel Eved and a chefter shel karka as reflecting a certain mitzius? You take a shvuah on something that's metaltal, that moves from side to side. You don't take a shvuah on something that's permanent and stationary. In the case of an Eved, the Eved is a chefter of metaltal in it, so far as it moves around. He or she moves around. Whereas in the case of karka, karka is forever li'olam b'mkomo menes. So sometimes when you define the nature of the object, you're looking at it as a heft in terms of its very physical reality, stripped of all legal categories. At other times, we're looking at the object as it's defined in legal terms. Now, an eved is defined as karka in legal terms for many different dinim, but it's not defined as an eved in terms of its mobility, in terms of its mitzius, in terms of the chefter shel eved. And I think the same logical analysis applies here in the context of a sandal shel chalitza, where the shear is not an abstract legal shear, It doesn't depend upon some conceptual definition of what constitutes a now, but rather it's got to function as a now. It's got to be a now bechefta, which means hagodol fi godlo and a katn fi katno and so forth and so on. And therefore, the halach of kitusei mechshiru, which rises above the mitzius, above the cheftz of sandal, and it goes into the abstract shame of the shir, that's totally inapplicable in the case of a sandal shel chalitza. A shofar and a lulav has to have the definition of a cheftz shel mitzvah in abstract terms. Can have a shame lulav, and there are many requirements to set up a shame lulav, one of which is the shir. Less than a shir, it's not a lulav, because a lulav is a conceptual legal concept. Masha'enke, the shear of sandal, is very, very unique and very atypical. And finally, Rabos, I think we covered pretty much all the sugyas, except for the last sugya you shall find on page Tzadites, and that's Ksivas Shtei Osios B'Shabbos, which leads us directly into Arigas Shnei Chutim B'Shabbos. And the question is, once again, is the Torah saying to us that as an absolute shear, unless you write two osios and Shabbos, that's not a maisa malacha of ksiva? Or no, the shtei osios is not just some sort of formal, absolute, abstract shear, but rather it's a means to an end, the goal of which is to form a word. We don't have any words in Lashon Kodesh that are made up of one single letter. So if we're talking about the building blocks of a teva, teva to mean, it's funny I use the word teva, building blocks of a teva, I mean to say a teva in the sense of a word, then the minimum number of building blocks to make up a word is two. And even if I use the same letter twice in a way that it doesn't form a word, for example, maybe Aleph Aleph, okay, that's the Sugya Mazrecha, but nevertheless, I'm chai because each Aleph, if it would add it to, if it were to be conjoined with another letter of the alphabet, could form a word. And the nafkaminas here are enormous. And perhaps this is the clearest case of all the sugyas we studied of a shear which is a means to an end. For example, the Mishnah says on Daf Kuf Dalid in Perek Abone that Os Achas No Trikon is according to Rabbi Shuvah Meseri Yechayev. He wrote one letter. Rashi says there was a simon and a kuda on the letter, and that nakuda tells me that that letter is the beginning of a word, and he's chayev. Ribbono shel Olam, how can he be chayev? He didn't write two letters. You want to talk about chatzi shiros in the Torah, fine. But we're talking about being chayev. He's got to bring a chatas b'shokei. And the answer is, because the shir of Beis Osios is only a means to an end, to create a teva. He created a teva with one letter. However, according to the Chachamim Pochim, they see the requirement of Shtei Osios as absolute, as formal and legal. There are no ifs, ands, and buts, and no exceptions. It's got to be a Tzuras HaMaisa of Beis Osios. And the second Afkamina, also in the same Sugyan Shabbos, but you turn back to Kuftalad Omen Aleph, and that is the case of Os Achash Shlima L'Sefer. Imagine I have a book, and it's missing one letter. By adding that one letter, I've engendered a completeness to the Sefer. And therefore, the Gemara establishes a Chiyuv in that case. And finally, the third Nafkamina, which is on page Kuf, is the case of a Mila. If you find a word that in some languages it can be created by one letter. In the same chakir we have to raise with regard to Ariga, where the shir is Shtei Chutim. And Rashi and Nagosa Shri of Klal Gadol, they apply the principle of Chatzi Shir to Malacha Shabbos, but the Michas Chinuch says that the exception to that rule is Ariga. In Ariga, there's no principle of chatzi shir. Perhaps the Minchas Chinuch means to say that the shir of shtei tfiros in Ariga is not just some sort of formal shir of the Maisa Ariga, and then you apply the principle, the universal principle of chatzi shir, but rather the shir of shnei chutim is reflective of Ariga. In other words, it's not Ariga unless you do two chutim. That's the minimum to create an ariga. And therefore, chatzi shir would be like the Meiri and the Ritva in two amos in Havara, Birshus Arav. Okay, Rabosai, any questions before we conclude the shir? Again, you have to let me know. I need feedback. I mean, I love this kind of stuff. To me, this is candy, but I also love a parasha shir and ashkafa shir, so it's not like, you know, it's one to the exclusion of the other. Let's see. I have a question here from Daniel Hoffman. Okay, for example, he says, what about shiurim of things that are invisible? Okay, let's see what he gives as an example of something that's invisible. Okay, for example, he says in drinking water in the city of New York, there are all sorts of things that, I guess that, shall we say, live in the water, but they're invisible. So would that incur a violation of achilas dvarim tmeim, achilas shrotzim, if you cannot see it? Well, I would say the following, that if you have something called a birya, you might be chayav no matter how small it is. Again, I'm not talking about something that's totally invisible. That might, you know, that's Rav Tendler's business. I don't want to go into that. That if it's too small for the naked eye to apprehend, then it's not cool. It doesn't exist at all. But I do think that Daniel's question really reflects on the concept of birya. Because we have various shiurim in Macholas Asuros, but if you have a living creature that's called a birya, you can be chayav for eating that or swallowing that, even if it's pachas mikashir. Which would indicate to me one of two things. Either we have to say that birya is a separate halacha, that the Torah is mechadish and Isra achilas birya, and therefore all the shiurim are completely suspended. Or alternatively, what it means is, and this is much more far-reaching, that the shiur of achil and shasiyah is also nothing that other than a means to an end. That end being a certain chashivus. And in the case of a sheretz, we could engender an achila chashuva if we chashom swallow an entire creature in its natural form, because it has the chashivus of the birya. For example, chashivus of a birya applies in tarovis. Normally, you would say bittul, if you have isa that falls into heter, but if an entire birya falls into a mixture, there is no din of bittul. We suspend the din of bittul because of the chashivus of a birya. And perhaps we could say the same thing applies in terms of shratzim and shkatzim, vermasim, and so forth, that if there's some chashivus, you don't need a shir. Why? Because the shir is meant as a means to achieve that chashivus. And you can achieve that even without a shir, because it's a birya. Then the question about Suda Shabbos, again, from the perspective of a formal Maisa Achila, it could be that if on Shabbos I would eat in a very strange way, let's say I have a choleh, who wants to mekayim the mitzvah of Onik Shabbos and Suda Shabbos, but he can't swallow in the normal way. He's got to do it some unnormal. Let's say, for example, if we hold that achila in general requires hanoas garon, so that if, let's say, you take chalev and you shove it down someone's throat in such a way that there's no hanoas garon, then it could very well be that in such a case, he's not chayav, according to that Mandi Omar. But nevertheless, if he had hanos goron, I'm sorry, if he had hanos me'ayim, by shoving food down your throat on Shabbos, could very well be you mekayim the mitzvah of owning Shabbos, if you feel satiated, even though you didn't have hanos goron. Or perhaps we could go the other way around. That even the Mandi Omer who requires Hanos me'ayim would say that the mitzvah of owning Shabbos requires hanos goron. And Anos Me'ayim in Shalom Kedarka would not be enough. But in any event, my point is, and this I think is absolutely emes lamito, that when it comes to something like Suda Shabbos, any formal shir is totally irrelevant. It's totally inappropriate. The shir of Suda Shabbos is clearly a shall I say, a paradigm example of a shir that's a means to an end in order to achieve the goal of Onik Shabbos. And in that sense, it's very similar to the flip side of Inui, where you violate an Inui by achieving this experience of Oneg. And therefore, whatever shiurim you have in Achil and Shasi on Yom Kippur should all be viewed as a means to an end of undermining Inui and bringing you into a state of Yisuvei Daita. And that could be a tremendous nafkemina if we assume, as the Gaon does in the Yerushalmi, that even Reish Lakish would agree to Chatzi Shir Asim and Torah in the case of Yom HaKippur, because the smallest amount could bring at least a partial Yisuvei Daita. Okay, Rabosai, I don't see any other questions here in chat. Of course, there's a possibility of turning on your speakers if you like, but if not, I'm going to end the shiur here, and I would request that you let me know if there's any way you could access the file that I put onto the WebEx. I have not yet heard any major success in that area. I would ask you to answer the questions as to what, when your flexibility is, and preferences, and how to spread the word, because I, as I said at the outset, I wish there was a way that we can reach out to others.